Hello, and welcome to the Deep Dive, the place where we take the latest insights and news, unpack them, and help you get truly well-informed quickly. I'm Alex Summers, your guide on these explorations.
And I'm Jordan Thompson, ready to connect the dots and explore the broader implications of today's most compelling stories. Today, we're doing a deep dive into the Register for Friday, August 15th, 2025.
That's right. We've got a packed issue of the Register here. It truly touches on everything, from the cutting edge of AI to the very real threats lurking in the digital world, all the way to the foundational infrastructure powering it all.
Yeah, quite a range.
Our mission today is to go beyond the headlines, extracting those crucial nuggets of knowledge and insight, the things that truly explain what's happening and why it matters to you. So let's unpack this fantastic collection of sources.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's kick things off with a topic that's been dominating headlines and honestly our daily lives: artificial intelligence. We're starting with a fascinating and frankly a bit unsettling report on how large language model chatbots, well, how they can be turned into tools for data theft. My first thought seeing this was, how is this even possible, and like how easily can it be done?
Well, that's the real chilling part, isn't it? The core finding from this King's College London study reveals a really profound shift. These AI chatbots built on LLMs, they can be manipulated into becoming malicious agents.
Malicious agents.
Yeah, but here's the key insight, the thing that really stands out. This isn't about complex hacking, not in the traditional sense anyway. It's about the sheer democratization of privacy invasion tools.
The democratization. What does that mean in practice? Like for the average person trying to attack someone?
It means the barrier to entry for attackers is incredibly low, disturbingly low. Researchers found that these system prompt customization tools, which are readily available from major companies like OpenAI.
Right, the ones anyone can use to build a custom GPT.
Exactly. They allow anyone with minimal technical expertise to basically transform these otherwise benign AI assistants into, well, investigator or detective roles. Think of it like giving the AI a very specific, covert mission just through clever instructions or prompt engineering.
So you don't even need to write malicious code.
Nope, not a single line. The danger is that these tools are designed to be user-friendly, and that very accessibility is now being weaponized.
And the effectiveness, well, it's alarming. The study involved, what, 502 participants?
That's right.
And it showed this massive increase in personal data disclosure. With the benign forms, only about 24% of people shared personal data.
Okay.
But with these maliciously prompted AI chatbots, that number just skyrocketed to over 90%.
90%. Wow.
And what's more, the data collected was more in-depth with richer and more personal narratives. So attackers get a much fuller picture of individuals.
Exactly. They're not just getting, surface-level facts like age or location. They're getting deeper, more intimate details. The researchers tested several models: Meta's Llama 3, both sizes, and Mistral's Mistral 7B.
Okay.
And crucially, these models were tested locally, so no data exposure to cloud providers. And they weren't retrained. They were only prompt engineered.
So the threat isn't the model itself being evil, it's how it's instructed.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And platforms like OpenAI's GPT store,
Right.
they're identified as ideal platforms for this kind of abuse because custom GPTs can be pre-prompted for malicious intent and then just distributed widely.
And the data vulnerability is incredibly broad, isn't it? People were sharing things like age, hobbies, country, pretty standard stuff.
Right.
But some also shared highly sensitive details, including health conditions and personal income. That's truly concerning.
It is. And one particularly alarming finding was that a reciprocal chatbot prompt, where the chatbot adopted a more social, supportive, maybe empathetic tone, that significantly boosted data sharing. And surprisingly, users reported no discomfort with this.
No discomfort, even when sharing sensitive info.
Apparently not. Which raises a critical question for all of us.
Yeah.
Are we becoming too trusting of these AI interactions? We're so used to them being helpful, sounding almost human, that we might just instinctively drop our guard.
Yeah, without realizing we're essentially talking to a digital detective, potentially.
Exactly.
It's a huge challenge for mitigation then. The researchers suggest things like user warnings or context-aware algorithms for data detection.
Sure, technical fixes.
But they also note this huge gap between users' awareness of privacy risks and how they share information.
Right. It's not just a tech problem, it's a human behavior problem too.
Absolutely. It highlights the need for digital literacy to catch up with the tech.
Regulators and platform providers really need to step up here. We need early audits, more transparency, and stricter rules against this kind of covert data collection.
It's a wake-up call for everyone interacting with these tools, which, let's be honest, is practically everyone these days.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, we've talked about AI's vulnerabilities, but the flip side is the truly staggering infrastructure it demands. I'm curious to see how a company like Foxconn, traditionally known for, well, iPhones, fits into that picture. How are they adapting?
It's an astonishing transformation, really. The big revelation here is that Foxconn, long synonymous with manufacturing consumer electronics, especially iPhones, has officially become a server slinger first and foremost.
A server slinger? I like that.
Their Q2 financial results really bear this out. Revenue grew 16% to NT $1.79 trillion.
Right.
It's about $59.73 billion U.S. And operating profit rose by 27%. This isn't just a slight shift. It's a profound strategic pivot.
And the numbers really tell the story, don't they? Their cloud and networking products division, which is mostly AI servers, delivered an amazing 41% of Foxconn's total revenue in Q2. That's up 9% from last year. And it's the first time this division has ever surpassed the smart consumer electronics unit.
First time ever. That's huge.
Sales of AI servers specifically grew by an incredible 60% year over year.
60%.
And if you look at their future growth projections, they're even more aggressive. CEO Cathy Yang predicts Q3 AI server revenue will jump an astonishing 170%.
Whoa.
And server rack sales are expected to surge by 300%.
300.
For the full year, Foxconn anticipates AI server revenue will exceed NT$1 trillion, which is around $33 billion U.S. That's a massive commitment.
It absolutely is. And Yang's long-term view really puts this into perspective. She emphasizes that AI is not just a passing fad, but a true industrial revolution.
An industrial revolution.
Yeah. It is a structural long-term growth trend. This isn't just about meeting current demand. It's about investing in what they see as a foundational shift. Investments expected to continue through 2026 and beyond.
So how are they scaling up to meet that?
Strategically, they're adopting modular data centers, partnering with Teco. This approach is designed to accelerate AI server rack shipments and significantly increase their market share in this booming sector. They're essentially building the backbone of the AI future, and it's a smart move to capture that early.
And what's interesting is how they're framing geopolitical challenges. Despite all the talk about U.S. tariffs and policy volatility, Foxconn actually views this as an opportunity to accelerate the optimization of our layout for the global supply chain.
Interesting take, turning a challenge into an opportunity.
Exactly. They think it'll help them expand into new markets and serve a wider range of customers. A very proactive stance. Now, in stark contrast to Foxconn's global expansion for AI hardware, we see Chinese web giant Tencent taking a very different stance. They're saying that they don't need to buy more American GPUs, including NVIDIA and AMD, because they already have all the chips they need. That's a bold claim, isn't it?
It's a really stark contrast, yeah. Foxconn's all in on the global AI hardware demand, like a gold rush. While Tencent is essentially saying, thanks, but we're good, this isn't just financial, it's strategic. With massive implications.
Yeah, so?
Well, Tencent's company president Martin Lau confirmed they have enough chips for training and continuous upgrade of our existing models and many options for inference chips. This is incredibly significant because it directly challenges the narrative that Chinese tech firms are totally dependent on Western chip tech. It suggests growing self-sufficiency.
And it's not just about having a stockpile, right? They're focusing on software, too.
Exactly. They're focusing heavily on software improvements in order to drive efficiency and inference so we can put more workloads on the same number of chips. This suggests a long-term slowdown in purchasing, which is definitely unwelcome news for U.S. chip makers like AMD and NVIDIA.
Who were probably hoping for big sales to China.
Right. And it also complicates the U.S. administration's plans to tax GPU sales to China.
What about the cost side for Tencent?
Financially, while their AI costs are rising, they're not certain revenue will match them. That indicates ongoing challenges in actually monetizing AI services, which is a hurdle across the industry. Their public cloud business is also diversifying beyond GPUs into CPU and database offerings, another sign of strategic shifts.
And this isn't the first time they've said this.
Nope. Third consecutive quarter, they've stated they don't need more GPUs. Tencent's still financially strong. Q2 revenue up 15% year over year, net profit up 11%. But the remarks show a deliberate strategy: lessen dependency, maximize efficiency from existing hardware.
So the big question is, how will these trends Foxconn's expansion versus Tencent's self-sufficiency shape global tech supply chains and geopolitics.
Exactly. It's a complex dance between commerce and national strategy. We're seeing the pieces move right now.
And speaking of global dynamics and AI, the military is certainly not being left out of this revolution. We have a piece on DARPA's latest advancements in autonomous fighter jets. That feels like a massive leap forward, doesn't it?
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Building on that idea of AI's reach, think about military applications like these DARPA jets. This isn't just about faster planes. It's about redefining strategic advantage entirely.
How so?
The push for AI in the military, seen here with DARPA, clearly indicates how deeply AI is expected to integrate into critical sectors. It's not just efficiency, it's about gaining a decisive edge. Their AIR program, artificial intelligence reinforcements, aims to give combat jets full autonomy.
Full autonomy.
For complex multi-ship missions beyond visual range. That means multiple uncrewed jets working together, making decisions in real time, far from human pilots.
And this builds on those ACE trials, right? The AI dogfighting against human pilots.
Exactly. Leveraging insights from the Air Combat Evolution trials, which famously featured AI-piloted F-16s engaging human pilots. Think about that. AI versus human top guns.
Wild. So what's the latest development?
An $11.3 million contract modification awarded to Systems and Technology Research, STR. It signaled the project's advancing into its second phase, narrowing participants from 6 to 4.
And what's STR working on specifically?
They're developing AI algorithms for real-time, distributed, autonomous tactical execution within uncertain, dynamic, and complex operational environments.
Okay, translate that for me.
Basically, making AI able to make complex combat decisions in a chaotic battle space. Another key area is creating fast and accurate models that capture uncertainty and automatically improve with more data. They want a truly adaptive, learning AI.
Sounds incredibly complex. How are they testing it?
Rigorously. Progressing from simulations to human-on-the-loop evaluations, and eventually benchmarks involving an actual uncrewed combat aerial vehicle using existing sensors, EW, and weapons tech.
So the implications are enormous.
Huge. A significant step towards a future where AI dominates military aviation. It potentially changes aerial combat as we know it, and of course raises profound ethical questions about autonomous weapon systems. Will a machine decide to fire? That's the future we're moving towards.
Before we move on, let's tie this back to the core of AI development with a look at DeepSeek, a Chinese AI model developer. Their struggles with homegrown chips. This feels like a direct counterpoint to Tencent's claims of self-sufficiency.
It's a fascinating case study, yeah. Really shows the complexities of building a full-stack AI ecosystem. DeepSeek, a prominent Chinese AI developer, reportedly faced significant hurdles training its next-gen R2 model using Huawei's homegrown Ascend accelerators.
And the key insight.
It's not just about raw chip performance on paper. It's the entire ecosystem. Stability, interconnects, the software stack.
And this happened because of government pressure to use Huawei chips?
Sources indicate that, yeah. Showing the geopolitical stakes and the push for national self-reliance.
And it was a rough road for them, sounds like.
Very rough. Despite months of effort, direct assistance from a whole team of Huawei engineers, the chips proved unstable. Interconnects were described as glacial, software immature. The result, they couldn't complete a single successful training run.
Wow. So R2 got delayed.
Yep. Delayed the release. They finally had to restart training using NVIDIA's H20 GPUs.
So the Huawei chips got relegated to inference duty, running models, not training them.
Exactly. Which is much less demanding. A huge setback, really.
Technically, what was the issue? Huawei's chips looked good on paper, right?
They did. More memory, faster processing for certain calculations. But the challenge came with large-scale distributed training, getting tens of thousands of these chips to work reliably together. It highlighted the immaturity of Huawei's whole ecosystem.
Not just the chips themselves.
Right. Plus, Huawei's chips didn't support FP8 data types, a more efficient format DeepSeek had optimized for with NVIDIA. That incompatibility forced significant retooling.
And this news comes just after reports that Chinese authorities were discouraging NVIDIA H20 use.
Yeah, especially for sensitive government workloads. Put DeepSeek in a really difficult position.
So it forces us to ask, how long until Chinese homegrown silicon can truly compete at the frontier of AI training?
Seems they still have a considerable journey ahead, despite the government push.
And underpinning all this AI development, whether it's autonomous jets or LLMs, is this massive, seemingly insatiable demand for compute power and infrastructure, which leads us to CoreWeave, a company at the heart of the GPU for rent business and their eye-watering financial situation.
Eye-watering is right. The story of CoreWeave is really a microcosm of the whole AI boom. Rapid growth, immense capital spending, and significant risk. They specialize in the GPU infrastructure essential for AI training.
Their Q2 results showed explosive revenue growth.
Huge surge. 207% year-over-year to $1.21 billion, beating estimates. But this growth came at a steep price, a net loss of $290.5 million for the quarter.
Ouch. Still better than last year's loss, though.
An improvement, yes, from $323 million. But shares still dropped after the announcement. The market seems skeptical about the cost of that growth.
And the spending is just incredible. $2.9 billion in capital expenditure in Q2 alone just to expand data centers.
They're the largest ever. And the CFO revealed they've raised over $25 billion in debt and equity since the start of 2024 to fund this expansion.
$25 billion.
Yeah. So not surprisingly, their interest expenses have significantly increased.
Yet the CEO sounds confident.
Very. Michael Intrator stated, "They are aggressively expanding our footprint on the back of intensifying demand signals from our customers, aiming for over 900 megawatts of active power by year end." He believes AI applications are beginning to permeate all areas of the economy.
That kind of spending suggests real conviction.
It does. And their strategic acquisition moves are telling, too. They proposed a $9 billion acquisition of Core Scientific, a Bitcoin miner.
Why a Bitcoin miner?
Power. It would immediately provide 1.3 gigawatts of power capacity and eliminate over $10 billion in future lease liability, a shortcut to critical infrastructure.
But that deal faced issues.
Yeah, shareholder dissatisfaction from Core Scientific about the value of CoreWeave shares offered.
What are the sustainability concerns for CoreWeave?
Significant. A big chunk of their full-year spending is expected in Q4, adding more pressure. But the key vulnerability is their heavy reliance on just a handful of hyperscalers.
How reliant?
77% of their 2024 revenue came from just two customers, Microsoft accounting for 62%, NVIDIA making up a large chunk of the rest.
Wow, that's concentration risk.
Huge reliance on the whims of management at the world's most powerful and valued tech businesses. Follow real.
Yeah.
So while it's a gold rush, it seems like CoreWeave is selling shovels, but paying a huge price for those shovels themselves and heavily reliant on a few big buyers.
So what does this all mean for you, the learner? It means the AI boom isn't just cool new features. It's a massive capital-intensive undertaking with real financial risks and geopolitical implications. It's truly a gold rush, but like any gold rush, there's a lot of digging and not everyone strikes it rich. It's a high-stakes game.
Indeed. And the scale of investment. From Foxconn building servers to CoreWeave building GPU clouds, it points to AI's transformative power, but also its immense resource demands, which leads us perfectly into our next segment, the foundational infrastructure and the cybersecurity threats underpinning our digital world.
Let's pivot now to the ever-present shadow over our connected world, cybersecurity. We have some truly stark warnings in the register today, starting with ransomware crews. They're not just attacking systems, but quite literally killing your defenses before they even start. That's a game changer, isn't it?
It absolutely is. The really chilling part here is the shift. They're not just trying to evade detection anymore. They're actively, aggressively neutralizing the detection tools themselves.
So how do organizations build resilience then if the first line of defense can just be disabled?
That's the question. It means thinking much more broadly about network segmentation, internal monitoring, going beyond just endpoint protection. The escalating threat involves at least a dozen ransomware gangs now incorporating kernel-level EDR killers into their malware.
EDR being endpoint detection and response, your security software.
Exactly. And these killers allow attackers to bypass almost every major endpoint security tool on the market. And they escalate privileges, steal data, encrypt it, and extort the victim.
The article gives examples, right?
Right.
Crypto 24.
Yeah, Crypto 24, a relatively new one, deployed against nearly two dozen companies. It uses a customized open source tool called Real Blinding EDR. This thing can disable kernel level hooks from 28 security vendors.
28, including big names.
Oh, yeah. Sophos, Trend Micro, Kaspersky, Bitdefender, Broadcom, Symantec, SentinelOne, Cisco, Fortinet, Citrix. It's a wide net. They even abuse legitimate tools like gpscript.exe to remotely uninstall security software after gaining admin rights. Just brazen.
And it's not just Crypto24 doing this.
No. Other prominent gangs, Ransom Hub, Black Suit Medusa, Quillen, Dragon Force, Crydox, Lynx, INC, are using updated versions of something called EDR Kill Shifter. These exploit legitimate but vulnerable drivers on Windows machines. It's called a Bring Your Own Vulnerable Driver, or BYOVD attack.
BYOVD. Explain that again.
Think of EDR as your computer's bodyguard.
Kernel-level killers essentially blind the bodyguard at its core level. In a BYOVD attack, they trick your system into loading a legitimate but flawed driver, effectively giving them the keys to the kingdom from the inside.
So sometimes they're not even bringing their own malicious software in, just repurposing existing vulnerabilities.
Precisely. The sophistication is clear. These aren't single leak tools, but different custom builds, often targeting specific signed drivers. And some operators even use legitimate commercial software like HRS Sword, repurposed to disable endpoint protections. Makes them harder to detect.
So even if your EDR is compromised, what then?
You need effective controls for lateral movement across the network, across that cloud-connected network fabric. It's a fundamental shift from evasion to neutralization.
And if that wasn't concerning enough, imagine a world where credentials for law enforcement and government officials are for sale on the dark web. For pocket change. That's our next story. Feels like something out of a spy thriller.
It does, but it's real. And it's about undermining the integrity of state institutions. Abnormal AI researchers found active FBI, other law enforcement, and government email accounts,
yeah.
US, UK, Brazil, Germany, India, sold on dark web markets for as little as $40.
$40 for an FBI account.
$40. The accessibility and low cost means sophisticated impersonation attacks could be launched by a wide range of actors, not just, you know, big state-sponsored groups.
That's astonishingly low. And these accounts were confirmed live. Not fake.
Confirmed live. Not spoofed or dormant. Researchers use screenshots, investigative tools like license plate lookups, law enforcement panels.
The abuse cases are chilling, posing as officials to trick victims.
Right. Into paying fake fines or giving up personal info. But even worse, they can send fraudulent subpoenas and emergency data requests, EDRs, to telcos and tech firms.
Exploiting laws like TALIA.
Exactly. To get surveillance records or PII. Often without a warrant, they can even access law enforcement portals on platforms like Meta, TikTok, Twitter, X.
But do what?
Pull private user data, issue count takedowns, remove content, all under official guise. That's a huge backdoor.
Where are these credentials coming from? How are they compromised?
Standard methods, sadly. Credential stuffing, exploiting weak or reused passwords, even by government employees. Info-stealing malware, phishing, social engineering. Bulk log files with compromised creds can be bought for just $5.
$5 for bulk logs.
Provides a vast pool for attackers. The implications are severe. Grants criminals' ability to operate within systems designed exclusively for official use, accessing sensitive data. Poses a significant national security threat. Erodes public trust.
So the big question is, how do we enforce better password hygiene and multi-factor authentication across vast government agencies?
Especially when the current security seems so alarmingly weak and the consequences so profound.
From individual email accounts to the very backbone of the internet, security vulnerabilities are truly everywhere. Now we're looking at a new HTTP2 flaw called MadeYourSet that can bring down servers. This feels fundamental, could affect millions of websites.
It's definitely a critical vulnerability. Researchers detail this common design flaw in HTTP2 implementations. Dubbed MadeYourSet, or CVE-2025-8671, it enables massive denial of service DDoS attacks.
Didn't we have something similar recently? Rapid Reset.
Exactly. It builds on the 2023 Rapid Reset vulnerability, which apparently isn't fully resolved. Rapid Reset let attackers bypass concurrency limits by quickly canceling requests. MadeYourSet is clever. It tricks the server into canceling the request on the client's behalf, bypassing previous mitigations.
So what's the impact?
Due to the asymmetric nature, sending a request is cheap, computing response is expensive, attackers can create an unbounded number of active requests. Makes most servers susceptible to complete DDoS or out-of-memory crashes.
Most servers? That's broad. Who's affected?
Over 100 vendors were notified because the flaw is common across HTTP2 implementations. Major names. Apache Tomcat, H2O, Cisco, Fastly, Mozilla, Netty, Varnish Software, Wind River, Zephyr Project, Google, IBM, Microsoft. That's a long list.
What's the mitigation?
Recommended strategies include stricter protocol validation, more rigorous stream state tracking, connection level rate controls, and anomaly detection. Patches have been announced by Apache Tomcat, Fastly, Varnish Software, with others investigating.
The implication seems to be constant vigilance, even for fundamental protocols.
Exactly. A reminder that even well-formed traffic can be weaponized. Continuous need for vigilance and patching.
And these vulnerabilities hit particularly hard when we talk about critical infrastructure. CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, is practically begging administrators to lock down these essential systems. What's driving this urgency?
What's really striking here is the emphasis on a foundational approach
assuming nothing, building a robust asset inventory from the ground up, which raises a critical question. How do we incentivize and equip organizations, especially those with legacy operational technology or OT systems, to adopt these crucial but often resource-intensive best practices?
So CISA is urging companies managing OT environments, the systems controlling physical processes like manufacturing, energy, oil, gas, to drastically improve their cybersecurity.
Right, and for good reason. OT systems, traditionally isolated but now increasingly connected, are often an afterthought for security teams.
The numbers are alarming.
Truly. Attacks on U.S. industrial companies up 87% in 2024, according to Drygos. Manufacturing particularly targeted due to immature OT security. The FBI notes a spike in critical infrastructure attacks. And get this, two new OT-specific malware variants discovered in 2024.
That's rare, right? Shows attackers are focusing on OT.
Exactly. So CISA's new guidance advises starting with a secure by default mindset and building a comprehensive living taxonomy-based OT asset inventory.
That sounds like a massive undertaking for some older facilities.
It is, but essential. The asset taxonomy is critical. It's a detailed categorization system to organize and prioritize OT assets. Helps with risk identification, vulnerability management, incident response.
The guidance gave examples like host names, IPs.
Yeah, host names, IPs, baseline OS images, supported communication protocols. Helps track potential exploit pathways in these complex environments.
And this wasn't just CISA, it was a collaborative effort.
Big collaboration. US EPA, NSA, FBI, plus cybersecurity agencies from Australia, Canada, Germany, the Netherlands, New Zealand. Shows the international concern.
Because the security of critical infrastructure is essential to the daily lives of all Americans and to national security.
Precisely. The document aims to help organizations identify and secure their most vital assets, reduce risk, ensure continuity. It's a plea for a fundamental rethink of security in these vital sectors. The threats are no longer hypothetical.
And it's not just governments and critical infrastructure being hit. Crypto exchanges, even everyday businesses, face sophisticated cyber attacks. Let's look at the BDTIC hot wallet heist. Pretty significant one.
Yeah, another reminder of the persistent vulnerability of crypto exchanges. BDTIC Turk, the Turkish exchange, halted all deposits and withdrawals after detecting unusual activity in his hot wallets. Alleged losses around $49 million across various tokens.
Okay, refresh my memory. Hot wallets versus cold wallets.
Hot wallets are software-based, internet-connected, higher risk for daily transactions. Cold wallets are hardware, offline, more secure for storing the majority of assets.
And BC Turk said their cold wallets were safe?
Yes. Stated cold wallets were unaffected, customer assets safe and secure there. Which is good, but still, $49 million.
How'd it happen?
Blockchain security firm PeckShield suspects a private key for the hot wallets may have been leaked. Attackers immediately started exchanging stolen tokens, notably moving about half to Ethereum, to try and obfuscate tracing.
What's the chance of recovery?
PeckShield's founder believes it's low. Suggests BD Torkirk would need to negotiate with a hacker.
And this is part of a bigger trend.
Definitely. Latest in a series of major crypto thefts. North Korea-linked groups implicated in $659 million in heists in 2024 and a $1.5 billion raid on Dubai-based Bybit earlier this year. Researchers also point to attacks exploiting Ethereum's Create2 opcode.
So the implications. Persistent vulnerability, importance of cold storage, challenge of tracing stolen digital assets.
Exactly. It's an ongoing battle.
And finally, on the cybersecurity front, a UK multinational providing tech stock availability tools had its website pulled amid a cyber attack. Sounds like another supply chain nightmare.
It highlights the pervasive nature of these threats. Yeah. It's not just nation states. It's vulnerabilities exploited everywhere, which forces us to ask, how do we move from reactive patching to proactive, secure by design principles across all sectors? Because every system is a potential target.
So Stock in the Channel, STS UK-based, provides tech stock availability tool.
Right. Took its website offline due to a ransomware attack.
How did the attackers get in?
Company confirmed a sophisticated group of criminal hackers exploited a zero-day vulnerability in one of the third-party applications as uses.
Textbook supply chain attack, then.
Pretty much. Caused extensive damage to our infrastructure. Website remained down, though email and phone lines stayed up.
Did they lose data?
ESTA claimed no evidence of a data breach, said critical data was recovered, but services were only partially operational. Stock price data might not be current.
And ESTA is a significant player. Lots of users rely on them.
Very significant. provides a platform for MSPs and resellers to view stock prices for over 3.1 million IT products from 34 distributors, over 60,000 registered users, 25,000 customers across Europe, North America, Australia. A lot of companies relying on their data.
So this highlights the huge risks from supply chain attacks, vulnerabilities in third-party apps.
Absolutely. Even companies providing essential industry tools are targets. Shows the broad reach and disruptive power of ransomware. Whether it's a hotel or a tech service provider, our interconnectedness means a weakness anywhere can be exploited everywhere. It's not just about securing your own house anymore.
Moving from the digital battlefront to the evolving tech ecosystem itself, we have some interesting updates from Microsoft. Starting with their long-standing relationship with the UK government, the sheer amount of money involved here is quite eye-opening.
It truly is. What's really striking is how the financial leverage of a company like Microsoft can shape public sector spending, even when a government is fiscally challenged. Which forces us to ask, at what point does the perceived value of an established proprietary ecosystem outweigh the potential savings and flexibility from open-source alternatives?
So the UK public sector is projected to spend how much?
Around $9 billion, that's roughly $12 billion US, on Microsoft products and services over 5 years under their current strategic partnership arrangement, SPA 24. Amounts to a staggering $1.9 billion, or $2.57 billion, annually.
Annually, and that's significant, especially given the UK government's widely acknowledged fiscal dead end.
Right. To put it in perspective, that $9 billion over 5 years, more than the entire $6.8 billion capital spending program for school building in 2025-26.
Wow.
And significantly more than the $1.4 billion annual savings from those controversial winter fuel allowance changes.
So the debate is open source versus Microsoft?
Essentially. Advocates for open source argue much of Microsoft's software has free alternatives that could save billions. Supporters of the current deal believe SPA 24 offers enhanced value across Microsoft's portfolio.
And some suggest a balance.
Yeah, a better balance between proprietary and FOSS solutions might deliver better value.
And this debate is happening while Microsoft is financially healthy, shall we say.
Immensely healthy.
Yeah.
18% revenue growth to $76.4 billion recently. Net margins around 36%. Valuation over $3.5 trillion. So when the UK government faces a fiscal dead end and Microsoft thrives, the optics and practicality of such a large contract become central to public discussion.
It's a classic public sector IT dilemma. Stick with the dominant vendor or pursue cheaper, maybe more flexible open source options.
Not an easy choice, with big implications for taxpayer money and government efficiency.
And speaking of Microsoft, they're also making some big changes to Windows, which might bring back some uncomfortable memories for longtime users. Sounds like a bit of deja vu for anyone who remembers Windows 8.
You're absolutely right. Definite sense of deja vu here. Microsoft Windows and Devices boss Pavan Davuluri revealed plans to reshape the OS, making voice, touch, and pen control more pervasive alongside new AI features.
Which echoes Windows 8, right? The touch-optimized UI that users largely rejected.
Exactly. Led to the swift ditching of its full-screen Metro interface. Raises the question, are they learning from past mistakes or repeating them?
What seems to be the motivation this time?
Feels like it's partly driven by a desire to sell more hardware, these Copilot Plus PCs, and justify huge AI investments, rather than directly addressing user needs or fixing existing shortcomings.
The article questions if users really want voice control in open offices.
Yeah, or if resources should focus on fixing Windows' current shortcomings and bugs and improving quality assurance, QA. Notably, Davuluri's interview reportedly lacked any mention of quality in testing.
Ouch. Any examples of this new direction?
A hint is in Windows settings, where you can describe desired actions and the OS tries to execute them. Raises immediate questions about reliability and errors.
Sounds a bit like throwing new features at a wall without shoring up the foundations.
The implications are clear. Concern that Microsoft might be repeating past mistakes, prioritizing new features and AI over user experience and stability. A risk of ignoring how its users worked once again, focusing on what Microsoft thinks users need.
And fundamental reliability should be paramount, right? Especially with complex new inputs.
Ideally. Which raises that key question. Can they innovate rapidly in new areas without compromising reliability of existing platforms? Because that often leads to user frustration.
And it's not just new features. Sometimes the basic stuff causes headaches. Microsoft's Patch Tuesday update just failed to install for some users. A major pain point for IT departments.
And that's exactly what I mean about reliability. Microsoft admitted the August Patch Tuesday update for Windows 11 24 H2 might fail to install via WSUS. showing error code 0x80240069.
WSUS being Windows Server Update Services, the enterprise tool.
Right. So while home users are unlikely to experience this issue, it's a significant problem for admins and organizations using WSUS. Prevents installing important security fixes.
And this follows other recent quality concerns.
Yeah, like that spurious event viewer message in a previous patch attributed to code under active development sneaking into production software.
The irony is not lost on IT pros relying on these updates.
Nope. For now, admins can manually install the patch or use a workaround. Microsoft's working on resolution, but it creates administrative headaches and security risks by delaying critical fixes. Adds to the perception of ongoing quality control issues, especially for enterprise updates.
It's a frustrating cycle for IT professionals.
Very, and it reinforces that question.
Right.
Can a company innovate rapidly without compromising the reliability of its core platforms? Because instability undermines trust.
Moving from a tech giant to a tech stalwart, we have an opinion piece about the future of Linux after Linus Torvalds. It suggests there's no formal plan for succession, which sounds audacious for such a critical piece of global infrastructure.
It truly is audacious. Linux kernel is lauded as remarkable, stable, widely adopted, powering everything from light bulbs to supercomputers, Android, regular updates, 20,000 per version, supports numerous processors. Its success without visible drama is virtually inconceivable.
So the audacity is building this critical thing with no formal succession plan.
Exactly. Speaks to the unique culture of open source, but raises a profound question. Can organic trust truly scale to navigate the immense pressures Linux will face in the coming decades?
The article argues Linux's success is unthinkable without Torvalds, his moral authority.
Right, guiding its uber geek community. He believes succession will happen naturally through trust among top maintainers, no formal plans needed.
But the article calls this lack of formality dangerous.
Yes. Succession is inherently uncertain. The project has unaddressed internal tensions that could surface.
A major concern is developer burnout.
Huge concern. Developers, and especially maintainers, are overstretched, effectively doing two jobs, paid work, and Linux kernel work. Companies relying on Linux often contribute employee time, but are happy for their employees to contribute as long as they don't have to pay.
That's a recipe for exhaustion and an ethical challenge for open source.
It leaves the project vulnerable to opportunism of commercial interests who might twist open source for their gain, and increasing pressure from massive bug reports generated by fuzzing and AI requires constant maintenance.
So the article concludes, hope is not a strategy.
Pretty much. Calls for formal, open, iterative, experimental succession planning to build trust between generations, ensure long-term health.
The implications are profound. Future leadership of one of the world's most fundamental software projects is uncertain.
Highlights challenges of sustaining large, volunteer-driven open source initiatives and the potential for commercial influence to alter their course. Fascinating study in philosophy versus reality.
From foundational operating systems to cutting-edge development tools, Microsoft is also pushing its .NET framework forward. Sounds like significant new capabilities in this update.
Indeed. Signifies continued evolution of Microsoft's developer ecosystem. Focus on modern web, cross-platform development, plus critical security enhancements like post-quantum crypto. Microsoft released Preview 7 of .NET 10 runtime and frameworks, expected to be near future complete. A significant step.
Key additions. WebSocket Stream. Sounds useful.
Yeah, a new library API providing a stream-based abstraction over WebSockets. Simplifies programming significantly deserialized JSON in just two lines. A real productivity boost.
Also improved passkey authentication.
In ASP.NET Core, yeah. Automatic support in new Blazor applications, which is Microsoft's preferred framework for modern web apps.
And MAUI, the multi-platform app UI. Enhancements there, too.
A new strongly typed source code generator for XAML, promising better build performance, better IntelliSense, updates to control APIs, numerous fixes and improvements.
And .NET 10 is an LTS release. Long-term support.
Right. 3 years of support. General availability scheduled for mid-November, coinciding with the virtual .NET Conf event.
What else is included in the broader scope?
Updates to C# 14. Expanded post-quantum cryptography support, huge for future-proofing security. Substantial work on Blazor framework. Updates to Windows Horms and WPF2, now supporting Windows 11 fluent design, modernizing desktop apps.
But MAUI still has quality issues.
Carries that reputation, yeah.
Yeah.
Article notes, Microsoft makes little use of the framework in its own applications.
So the question is, how quickly can MAUI overcome that quality perception?
That's a persistent challenge for them.
And while we're on software development, we have a hands-on review of a vibe coding platform called Anything. Promises to make app creation as easy as selling t-shirts. But caution advised. Sounds like for good reason.
You're right to be cautious. The real insight here is the tension between the ambitious promise of effortless AI development and the messy realities of software engineering. Forces us to ask, how do we set realistic expectations for no-code or vibe coding tools? Ensure users understand hidden complexities, pitfalls, especially security and reliability.
So Create, the startup, launched Anything 1.0, founded by ex-Google PMs.
Right. Claims it makes app building as easy as selling t-shirts, lets users go from idea app store to first customer in days. Bold claims, boasts 30,000 monthly active users, 20,000 daily projects, a frontier AI agent so reliable you can build entire apps without looking at the code once.
Without looking at the code once. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
But the review found.
Caution advised. The register's hands-on generated a host of errors. A test prompt for a volunteer rota system resulted in an app that didn't work. Loading screen, hundreds of errors in the log.
Even after the AI fixed it?
Issues persisted. Volunteers having access to admin screens, major security flaw. Log still showing errors, despite the AI confidently reporting success.
What's the underlying tech?
JavaScript, React, Next.js, Neon serverless Postgres. Notably, many generated files warn that editing them may cause issues. Kind of defeats the don't look at the code promise.
So the critique is over-optimistic claims. An AI that ignores errors.
Pretty much. Sails on regardless of logs full of errors. Mm-hmm. Strongly questions if the end result is reliable or secure. Challenges the goal of building apps without looking at code.
And this is part of a trend. Vibe coding.
Growing trend. Vercel's V0.app, JetBrains Kinetto, AWS Kiro, where over-promising appears to be normal.
Implications. Gap between hype and reality in AI software dev.
Significant gap. AI can speed things up, but raises questions about quality, security, necessity of human oversight, especially for non-coders. Is it democratizing development or creating hidden problems?
And from software development to the smart devices in your home, even basic functions can go awry. Alexa in the UK had a rough day. Hearing about those alarms stuck on loop, I could almost feel the panic. Who hasn't desperately yanked the plug on a smart device?
It's a stark reminder, isn't it, of our increasing dependency on cloud services for seemingly simple, everyday tasks. Brings up a crucial question. As more of our lives become smart and connected, how do we build in resilience, offline capabilities to prevent these cascading failures?
So Amazon's Alexa had a significant widespread outage in the UK, primarily affecting basic functions like alarms and timers.
Yeah, user impact was immediate and frustrating. Reports surged on Down Detector around 8 a.m. local time. Users complained of alarms blaring endlessly, refusing to be silenced. Some yanked plugs only for alarms to resume on power on.
Oh, no. Others missed wake-up calls. Got late.
Attempts to cancel alarms via the app met with unable to cancel alarms at this time.
Yeah.
Even previously deleted scheduled wake-ups started going off.
It wasn't just alarms. Reminders, routines, too.
Extended beyond alarms and timers to reminders, routines. Blink doorbell notifications also affected. Shows how interconnected these services are.
What caused it? Did Amazon say?
Scale and timing suggest a broader back-end or cloud services issue, not individual devices. Amazon hadn't commented at time of publication, leaving users in the dark.
Implications. Highlights our reliance on smart tech for basic tasks.
Significant reliance. Underscores fragility of cloud-dependent services. How single points of failure lead to widespread disruption, frustration for millions, makes you think. What happens when digital assistants stop assisting? What do we lose relying so heavily on always-on connectivity?
So what does this all mean? It means the tech world is in constant flux. Innovations, disruptions at every layer, from government procurement to the devices in our homes. A landscape of incredible opportunity and persistent challenges, especially reliability and security. Let's zoom out now. Look at the truly colossal investments shaping our digital future. When we talk AI, we're talking infrastructure build-out on an almost unfathomable scale. The numbers from Amazon, Microsoft, Google, staggering, akin to entire national economies. Makes CoreWeave's $25 billion look small, doesn't it?
It truly puts it into perspective. The pursuit of AI is literally reshaping global economies and energy landscapes. Raises a fundamental question. Can our existing energy grids sustain this exponential growth? Or will localized alternative power become the norm?
So the cloud giants are pouring capital into data centers.
Immense capital. Omdia figures show Amazon's annual data center capex exceeding $100 billion. comparable to Costa Rica's entire GDP. Larger than Luxembourg or Lithuania, that's just one company.
And the others, Google, Microsoft, Meta.
Google's CapEx, $82 billion larger than Slovenia's economy, Microsoft, $75 billion more than Uganda's GDP. Meta, $69 billion surpasses Bahrain's output.
Globally, the spending is projected to hit.
Top $657 billion for 2025, nearly doubling from $330 billion in 2023.
Wow. And AI is the main driver.
Largely attributed to the continuing desire for ever more compute power to drive AI development, expectation of future returns, even if still speculative.
But there's skepticism about the ROI.
Despite the hype, yeah. A McKinsey report noted many execs are skeptical about measurable ROI from current AI spending. Meta's Q2 earnings showed conventional machine learning, not Gen AI, driving profits.
Yet demand still outstrips supply for AI compute.
Yes. Driven by larger models like GPT-5 for training and broader adoption like ChatGPT for inferencing 700 million users, 120 million daily visits.
How does the cost break down? Is it all just chips?
IT kit is still the largest cost, but spending on physical infrastructure, power generation, distribution, thermal management is growing faster. To cope with hot and hungry AI servers, needs significant and continuous innovation in cooling, power delivery, leads to investments in on-site power, microgrid as a service.
And the future scale, even bigger data centers.
Build-out is accelerating. Multi-gigawatt facilities equivalent to entire country's current capacity are appearing in the pipeline. Meta's planning multi-gigawatt campuses from 2026. Some in early planning could reach 5 gigawatts, unprecedented scale.
That brings us directly to our next story. Data center giant Equinix is doing just that. Signing deals for nuclear and fuel cell power for its AI bit barns. Sounds like they're trying to get ahead of the curve on energy supply.
Absolutely. Equinix is showing a forward-thinking, diversified power strategy. As a leading operator, they're striking deals with alternative energy providers to meet massive power demands driven by AI. A proactive strategy to circumvent future power constraints, a very real concern given those numbers.
And they see nuclear as a promising solution.
For stable, sustainable power, yeah. Mm. Not just for them, but for strengthening the broader grid.
Their nuclear partnerships are diverse, but still years away, targeting early 2030s.
Right. Technologies are still developing. Four agreements. 500 milliwatt from Oklo's Aurora powerhouses. First commercial advanced reactor expected by end of decade. Pre-ordered 20 Kaleidos microreactors from Radiant Industries, 1 milliwatt each. Small enough for truck trailers.
Truck trailers.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Letter of intent with ULC Energy in the Netherlands for up to 250 milliwatt using Rolls-Royce SMRs planned for UK deployment. And a 500 milliwatt pre-order agreement with Stellaria, targeting first fission by 2029, production by 2035. They're betting big on nuclear.
Beyond nuclear, they're also using fuel cells, nearer term.
Yes. Agreement with Bloom Energy for over 100 milliwatt of solid oxide fuel cells across 19-plus U.S. data centers. Can provide primary power or operate grid parallel, using natural gas, stripping hydrogen for the reaction.
So the implications are significant. AI demand accelerating adoption of novel off-grid power.
Clearly. Signals a fundamental shift in how data centers are powered. Nuclear making a notable resurgence. Glimpse into the future of industrial power.
And continuing on nuclear and AI news about President Trump's fast-track nuclear reactor scheme, sounds like a coordinated effort.
It absolutely is. The scale of hyperscaler investment, plus government pushes for nuclear, shows AI's profound impact on infrastructure and resource allocation. Raises that critical question. Can this rapid expansion be truly sustainable without fundamental shifts in energy production and consumption paradigms?
So the U.S. Department of Energy named 10 companies for this pilot program aimed at fast-tracking advanced reactors outside national labs.
Right. Cutting through red tape. The ambitious goal, establish a pathway for the private sector to develop and demo new designs. Target of at least 3 test reactors operational by July 4, 2026, America's 250th anniversary.
Who are the selected companies? Includes Oklo and Radiant again.
Yep, both mentioned with Equinix, plus Elotomics, Antares Nuclear, Atomic Alchemy, Deep Fission, Last Energy, Natural Resources LLC, Terrestrial Energy, Valar Atomics.
And DOE authorization helps them get private funding, but NRC still licenses commercially.
Exactly. Not a complete free-for-all, but an acceleration.
And a key motivation is explicitly feeding the country's AI ambitions. The power-hungry data centers.
Explicitly stated, DOE even identified 4 national lab sites for private data centers co-located with energy generation. Also working on microreactors small enough for truck trailers, decentralized, on-demand power.
What's the broader context, other nuclear developments?
New York State building its first major new plant in 15-plus years.
Yeah.
Texas selecting Hyundai for a nuclear-powered data center. Plus, DOE allocating nearly $1 billion to advance U.S. critical mineral sector, reducing dependence on foreign sources like China for semiconductor materials.
So it's a clear governmental push for nuclear as a strategic solution for AI energy demands.
Absolutely. Enhancing energy independence, bolstering the national AI ecosystem, intertwined with geopolitical goals on critical minerals. A massive, multifaceted strategic push.
And while we're talking global impacts, Russia being blamed for cyber attacks on the U.S. court system and a Norwegian dam, highlighting the truly dark side of the geopolitical dimension of cyber warfare. Feels less about money, more about disruption and intelligence.
Definitely seems that way. Russia reportedly behind two significant attacks, a prolonged intrusion into the U.S. federal court system, and taking control of a dam in Norway.
The U.S. court system breach. How bad was it?
Attackers spent months in the digital filing cabinet, the CMECF platform, accessed sealed documents, witness identities, the system's blueprint. The platform, a patchwork of over 200 locally run instances, many outdated Windows XP era, was breached via bugs from 2020.
And Russia is blamed.
New York Times reported Russia is at least in part responsible for this years-long effort. Searches linked to Russian Eastern European surnames.
And the Norwegian dam incident.
In April, suspected Russian operators gained access to controls for a dam in Bremanger. Held its valves open for 4 hours, releasing 500 liters of water per second.
Why? What was the point?
Norway's domestic intelligence agency, PST, blamed Moscow. Called it pure muscle flexing, designed to cause fear and chaos among the general population.
Implications. Growing threat of nation-state attacks on critical civilian infrastructure, sensitive government systems.
Absolutely. Underscores vulnerabilities of outdated IT. Potential for cyber warfare as a tool for geopolitical influence and disruption.
And finally, shifting to individual data. Mass breaches hitting Italian hotels. Seems no sector is safe.
No sector is safe. These incidents, critical infrastructure to hotel data, highlight the pervasive nature of cyber threats. Not just sophisticated nation states, vulnerabilities exploited everywhere, raises that question. How do we move from reactive patching to proactive, secure by design? Because every system is a target.
So Italy's digital agency, AGID, confirmed claims by a cyber criminal, MyDocs, about mass data thefts from Italian hotels since June.
Yes. Criminal claimed to have stolen thousands of guests' sensitive identity documents, passports, ID cards from booking systems between June and August. AGID verified the data authenticity by intercepting an illegal sale.
How many hotels affected?
10 confirmed, potentially rising. The scale is shocking. A small 24-bed hotel reportedly had over 7,000 documents listed. Might cover years of data or be inflated.
And that stolen data is highly valuable. For fraud.
Extremely valuable. Creating false documents, opening bank accounts, social engineering, digital identity theft, serious financial and legal consequences for victims.
Okay.
A gold mine for identity thieves.
What's the response?
Italy's Data Protection Authority, GDDP, launched a formal investigation. Urged hotels to report irregularities promptly. Notify affected guests.
Implications. Widespread vulnerability of hospitality sector, booking systems, high value of identity docs on dark web.
Exactly. Need for stronger cybersecurity, data protection protocols across industries handling sensitive personal info. Reminder that sometimes the most valuable data isn't financial, but personal identity itself.
Let's lighten the mood just a little bit, but stick with the theme of digital interactions. A fascinating study on how well, or rather how poorly, social media users are at spotting ads. I think we all think we're good at it, but this suggests otherwise.
You're right. We all have that confidence, don't we? But the real insight here is how our autopilot scrolling behavior makes us highly susceptible to subtle advertising, often without us realizing. Raises a critical question. In an age where content and commerce are so deeply intertwined, how can platforms and regulators truly empower users to critically evaluate what they're seeing, rather than just hoping disclosures suffice?
So researchers found users are not great at spotting when an influencer is trying to sell them something, even when regulations require clear disclosures.
Pretty much. Study involved 152 Instagram users viewing mocked-up feeds. 8 out of 29 posts were ads. Eye tracking measured fixation, dwell time, then interviews.
What did they find? What do people pay attention to?
Participants paid more attention to calls to action, like shop now buttons, than to disclaimers. Found it easiest to identify ads by presence absence of verification badges and overly glossy visuals, which ironically often led to distrust.
So marketers are getting better at blending in. Less polished posts work better.
Seems so. Less polished, more informal posts were more likely to engage users, a subtle game of persuasion.
Which creates a regulatory challenge, right? Guidelines require content to be clearly identifiable as an ad.
But these disclosures aren't working as intended. Labels might be hidden in a hashtag or buried in the Read More section, easy to miss in a rapid scroll.
What happens when users do notice an ad?
Often felt tricked, immediately moved on. But some didn't mind not noticing.
Didn't mind.
Which researchers found most worrying, as it profoundly blurs the line between persuasion and information?
So the implications. Significant gap between regulatory intent and user perception. Ethical challenges for marketers. Concerns about consumer manipulation.
All of the above. Highlights ethical challenges for marketers and influencers adept at covert promotion. Raises serious concerns about manipulation in the digital space. Makes you question everything you see in your feed. Hashtag, tag, tag, outro.
What a deep dive. From those massive financial shifts in AI infrastructure to the concerning ease of weaponizing chatbots.
Yeah.
And from critical infrastructure under cyber attack to the future of Linux after Torvalds, it's clear the tech landscape is incredibly dynamic, full of complex challenges. Mm. We've seen how everything from a fundamental flaw in HTTP2 to global supply chain decisions at Foxconn and Tencent can have enormous impacts.
Indeed. And the stories from the Register today really underscore how deeply intertwined technology is with our daily lives, our economies, even global security. Whether it's the privacy implications of AI, that evolving battle against ransomware that literally blinds your defenses, or the massive energy demands of data centers.
Yeah.
Understanding these threads is key.
Yeah. And those vulnerabilities we discussed, HTTP2, government credentials on the dark web, show the battle for digital security is constant, evolving.
Requires vigilance at every level, individuals, companies, governments.
So what does this all mean for you, our dedicated learner? It means staying curious, questioning what you see, understanding the why behind the headlines is more important than ever. We hope this deep dive has given you some incredible aha moments, equipped you with insights to feel truly well-informed about this intricate world.
And as we conclude today's deep dive, here's a provocative thought for you to consider. If the push for AI and advanced computing is leading to unprecedented investments in energy and infrastructure, building powerful new systems, but simultaneously creating new, easily exploitable vulnerabilities at every layer, are we building a future of incredible power or one of inherent fragility? Something to ponder as you go about your day.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. I'm Alex Summers.
And I'm Jordan Thompson.
And we'll be back next time with more crucial insights. Until then, keep digging, keep learning.